From Bureaus Worldwide, this is FSN.
Thank you very much, Holly. Thank you. Welcome to Friday's Richie Allen radio show. It's a scorcher in Salford. It's scorching around the country. I hope you're enjoying it. And you've taken me with you. Maybe you're on the south coast, maybe. Although councillors and people in various authoritative positions are telling people on the south coast to stay away from our beaches. Stay away from our beaches, they're saying. Who could believe it?
It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
Mad times, eh? Don't come near our beaches.
It's the Richie Allen Show. Broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Yes, and I'm with you this afternoon because I wasn't with you yesterday afternoon. So it's a special, very warm Friday edition of the Richie Allen Radio Show. Thanks for joining me. Twitter, I'm looking at Twitter right now. So if you'd like to tweet to me, do drop me a tweet. I'll be glad to hear from you. I gave plenty of notice that I was going to do this. So I think we've got a healthy old listenership. So we have. And we'll look at one or two of the week's bigger stories. I've got a few tunes as well. And, well, we can just relax. Because it's a scorcher down south. So it is. Humid. It's more humid, really, in the northwest here. Strange times. Very good weather. Last Friday. Then fairly unsettled for the next few days. And good today. They're playing the harp, I'm telling you. I'm telling you, they're playing the harp. And it's not the lyre either, or the lyre. Is it lyre? L-Y-R-E. Well, if I say they're playing the harp, I'm a liar. Or is it lyre? It's lyre, isn't it? Yes. Yeah. Mad times. Hilarious, as I said, to see these people from local councils going on national television to say, don't come to our towns. Don't come to our beaches. It's dangerous. Feck off, you lunatic. You know, some of the businesses in these places can maybe do a fortnight's takings in one day. How dare you try and discourage people from going to the beach? It's all a bit mad. Here's a little vox pop courtesy of the BBC of some women taking to the beaches of Southend.
We got here actually, we suddenly realised there's a lot of people in a very small amount of space, so we're going to try our best to keep our distance from everybody else.
It's difficult when they're so crowded everywhere, isn't it? Yeah, not many people wearing masks in the shops and stuff around here, I've noticed.
Well, we're stuck in for 3 months. You've got to live, haven't you? Because yes. We don't know when this is going
to
end.
You've got to live. We're stuck in for 3 months. You've got to live. Made me laugh, these women saying, we're going to try and socially distance. The beach in South End is so crowded, you can't see the sand. It's as it should be in August, of course. Right, there's lots for me and you to talk about, me and you, lots. But I did say we'd have a few tunes as well this afternoon. And here's a tune from a man who was born in Waterford City on the Cork Road. But his family moved to London when he was 7 or 8 years old. But he's still a Daisha man. He's still of Port Lauraga. He's still a Waterfordian. Gilbert O'Sullivan kicking off the tunes today on a special Friday edition of the Richie Allen Radio Show. Welcome to the show. Yeah, Gilbert O'Sullivan from Waterford City. I tell you, for a relatively small city, we've given the world some great people. Carrie Crowley, of course, the RTE presenter and broadcaster. Val Dunican, of course, the BBG. And not to mention, of course, the blah. The blah, we never spoke about the blah on this programme. What is a blah? It's a crusty roll, unique to Waterford City. They come from all over the world to taste the blah. It's spelled B-L-A-A, blah. And you put luncheon meat in it. Luncheon meat. Luncheon meat is where a butcher takes... Basically, a butcher gets hooves, antlers, smelly socks, boots, old tyres from a tyre factory, any other shite you can think of, and puts it all into a mixer. And out comes luncheon meat. And you put luncheon meat in your blah. If you take butter, you butter it copiously. Copious butter. And if you don't, if you're dry like myself, you have a dry blah. Waterford City, yes. The county that gave us Ken McGrath, the Jewel, Tony Brown, Michael Brick Walsh. That's hurling for hurling people, hurlers. Right, 11 minutes past 3. Welcome to the This Is Your Richie Allen Radio Show. Friday afternoon's edition. More music to come. More music to come. Right, so interesting story in the Times today. Talking about long COVID. Long COVID. Long COVID is being mentioned so often this week. It began on Sunday. And I talked about this on Sunday View. Long COVID. And pretty soon, long COVID will be prescribed. It will go into the British medical journals as a real disease. Long COVID is when you've had COVID, but it doesn't go away. It affects your kidneys or your spleen or your left knee or your ankle or your rectum or your heart or your lungs or your eyes. Chronic illness is long COVID. This in the Times today, young people have revealed the debilitating long-term consequences they are suffering from months after being infected even with COVID-19. Previously fit and healthy people who contracted the virus have described to the Times their struggles to overcome its long-term effects. MPs were told this week that up to 500,000 coronavirus sufferers are feeling the effects of long COVID. And the Times spoke to a few so-called young people, including Sarah Edwards. Yes, S-A-R-A, no H, Sarah Edwards, from Cardiff, who said that she ran half marathons and went to the gym 5 days a week before she became ill in April. She works in operational management at the University Hospital of Wales, and said, "I still haven't returned to work as I'm still suffering fatigue. We were led to believe that generally you were only vulnerable if you were elderly or if you were vulnerable, which made it such a shock to me," said Sarah. "I couldn't understand why I was still ill. The doctors think coronavirus made my blood thick, sticky blood, and it has caused me to have a clot on my lung. They think I've had a series of microclots, but because I'm young and fit, my body was able to deal with them. Sticky blood. COVID, sticky blood. Long COVID, it's everywhere. And it's a big part of the continuing narrative, you see, because it's a storyline that's very important for the people, for those who are pushing this. It's a very important storyline because it moves things on. No longer is COVID a very nasty respiratory infection. It never was to begin with. But let's play along. No longer is it a nasty respiratory infection that we need to shield from, hide from, track everybody, lock down the country, wreck the economy. No. No, the storyline has moved on. It can now leave you very ill with many, many, many chronic conditions for a very long time. If you listen to Sunday View, you'll remember this guy, a professor of tropical medicine based in Liverpool, Paul Garner. This was Sunday on BBC Breakfast. Feast your ears again.
So I have ringing ears, tingling down my arms, but fatigue. I'll need to go back to bed 3 or 4 times a day. I used to, Sunday morning, I'd normally go on my happy bus run, but today I might make a couple of kilometres down to the supermarket. So if I speak for a long time on conference calls, my speech starts to go and I'll get a headache. So one of the important things is for me is that I have problems related to fatigue, but there's a huge wide spectrum of different conditions that people have.
Now, that was him on Sunday. Why did I play you that again? Well, it's important because I, just out of curiosity, went to his Twitter page earlier today. And it turns out that Paul Garner, who isn't Liverpudlian by the sounds of him, but he works in tropical medicine at a university in Liverpool. It turns out that he's been all over the world in the last 7 days. Don't believe me? Go to his Twitter feed. He has been on television channels all over the world. This one guy talking about his tinnitus and jogging to the shops and long COVID. Here he is speaking to CNN, impressively. Again, Paul Garner.
My friend in Australia said, Paul, you are trying to dominate this disease. You are trying to beat it and go back to your levels of exercise. But what you should do is try and accommodate the virus. You need to accommodate it. The virus is still in charge.
The virus is still in charge.
You know, people should know, you also have had malaria and dengue. You're no shrinking violet here. You wrote...
He sounds like a fucking hypochondriac. He had malaria and dengue fever. Lovely.
Recently, quote, this stuff is real. People are ill. Doctors need to stop diagnosing this as anxiety. We've messed up before. Let's not do it again with long-term COVID-19 illness. You know, what do you fear will happen if experts continue to misdiagnose long-term COVID illnesses such as yours?
This is an infomercial, you see. It's an infomercial. It's informing the public of the change in the storyline. Now COVID is this thing that can leave you with debilitating chronic illnesses for very long periods of time after you've had it. And the presenter is setting him up. These are scripted questions, okay? And it's dreadful stuff, this, by the media. And he allows this go pretty much unchallenged. Listen to what he says next.
I think that doctors are not yet familiar with the huge, great spectrum of different conditions. I have fatigue. Some of them.
So before we hear that again, listen again to the question posed by the presenter, because it's very important.
You know, long-term COVID illnesses such as yours. 18 illness. Long-term COVID. We've messed up before.
Yeah,
need
here
to
we
stop
go.
Diagnosing this as anxiety. Wrote recently, quote, this stuff is real.
This stuff is real. Right. Now, the question.
People are ill. Doctors need to stop diagnosing this as anxiety. We've messed up before. Let's not do it again with.
Right. So doctors need to stop diagnosing people as having anxiety or stress. They need to stop doing that and consider that the symptoms that are presenting within people are in fact long-term COVID. So whereas a doctor would have examined people thousands of times, different people, and would have familiarised himself or herself with symptoms of certain conditions. And a doctor might feel very sure that the person sitting in front of him has got an illness that's related to stress, right, or anxiety. That doctor has to cop on to himself or herself, pull themselves up by the bootstraps, and start diagnosing this as COVID. You're hearing this.
Long-term COVID-19 illness. You know, what do you fear will happen if experts continue to misdiagnose long-term COVID illnesses such as yours?
Wow, if they continue to misdiagnose. So, presumably then, anybody going to the doctor in the near future, presenting whatever symptoms, you could walk in there with a gaping wound, you could have been on a farm, you could have been shoveling slurry around, you could have been walking around with a wheelbarrow and you might hurt yourself, and you go to a doctor and the doctor might say that you have COVID. Stop diagnosing stuff as you would do and accept that it's COVID.
I think that doctors are not yet familiar with the huge, great spectrum of different conditions. I have fatigue. Some of the people I know have very rapid heart rates. They can't. A woman I know who's a boxer cannot walk up a flight of stairs without getting a very fast heart rate.
He knows a female boxer.
Very different syndrome. So people are going to their doctors and the doctors don't recognise it. And if they're not confident, they will be dismissed. So it's really important that medics and people at home all believe what's happening to them, because it is a very strange illness and it causes many very strange, unexpected symptoms, but they are real.
It's important that people believe. It's important that you believe. It's important that you have confidence. If you feel that you've got a chronic illness, if you feel like you've got fatigue, lethargy that's almost insurmountable, it must be COVID, and you need to double down on that when you go to see your doctor. And this guy, whom we took the piss out of on Sunday View last Sunday with the MASH theme, this guy, since then he's been on multiple international news channels, trying to convince people that we're moving into a new phase of COVID. This long COVID. And the Times alleges today that 500,000 people in the UK may have long COVID. Now ask yourself why. Well, because they're moving the story on. They're basically flogging a dead horse, for want of a better word. They're fertilising the lawn. This is all about keeping this in the minds of people. It's about keeping people scared of it. It's about justifying continuing measures to try and prevent us all from getting it until they are ready to say, here you go, we've got a number of vaccines now that we will need to take in order to help us eliminate this COVID, in order for you to be able to go back to your daily lives. It's quite astonishing. It's astonishing. 21 minutes past the hour. I'm going to take a piece of music now. When we come back, a listener called Paul from Leeds did send me... Before we do that, I mean, it occurred to me this morning, This is very fertile ground for the people behind the pandemic hoax. It's very fertile ground because there isn't any scepticism from the media, as we know. The media is rinsing and repeating it constantly. You heard the CNN guy. Those weren't softball questions. That was a script that both of them had in front of them. The script, you know. What do you say to these doctors who aren't diagnosing and maybe misdiagnosing? You know, the presenter's job is to say, ah, come on, Paul, you know. Are you trying to tell me that because of the virus, that all the everyday ailments that people suffer from, those have all gone away, Paul, have they? Because of the virus? And if not, if somebody presents with something that you as a physician would see quite often, you've now got to assign it as COVID? That's his job, right? But no, the presenter is there to play along. And left unchallenged, pretty soon, they'll be telling us that COVID causes loss of limbs. Not amputation as a result of diabetes, but COVID causes body parts to fall off people. They'll be saying that stuff in the near future. Harry, how do you know your granddad died of COVID? How can you be sure, Harry?
His head fell off.
His head fell off, yeah.
Yeah, he was pretty old.
He was old. And that's where it goes if you don't stop it. People will be losing digits, fingers. Mad stuff, this. Before I read the email from Paul this morning, he sent me a link to an article, which was in the New York Times back in 2007. I did post the article on Twitter and on Facebook, and you might have read it there. If not, you can find it there now. Before we read the article, because it's very, very telling, this is America, and it's a wonderful song called Ventura Highway, live on the Richie Allen Radio Show on Friday, August 7th, 2020. I'm enjoying this. I will be reading some of your tweets as we go along as well. More in a few minutes' time. Don't go anywhere. Ventura Highway from America on the Richie Allen Radio Show. It's exactly 27 minutes past three. It is Friday, of course. I'm here because I wasn't with you yesterday. Thanks for your tweets. Lots of them, which is nice. Nice. Hi to Sean Hip Hop. How you doing, Sean? Hi to Mark. How you doing, Mark? Hi to Liz Jones. How you doing, Liz? Mark says, I don't have a phone anymore, but when I did, it stayed at home. The most static mobile ever, I used to call it. Yes. Martin says, Richie, I'm listening in my lovely garden in Rochdale. Heaven is a place on earth, he says. Yeah, lovely. Lovely to be sitting down in your garden without a care in the world. Liz is hoping for a thunderstorm. How you doing, Liz? Right, let me scroll on up there. A lot of comments about some of the stuff we've talked about already. I will read this article from the New York Times back in 2007 in a moment. Shasta Sharon says, Richie, they'll push long COVID, but they won't push vaccine side effects. The man talking about his long COVID would certainly not be travelling the world speaking about it if it was as bad as he is saying. I know this as someone who has lost, or someone who has ME. He's not travelling, he's doing these interviews from his home. But I hear you. Hi to Cuthbert. How are you doing, Cuthbert? There's a name that nobody gets christened with in 2020. Nobody. When was the last time somebody was christened Cuthbert? It's not happening, is it? Herbert might still be a possibility for some parents, but Cuthbert, there's no way, right? Ian says, it's electromagnetic hypersensitivity, he says. Every man, woman and child has Bluetooth headphones on now. And they knew this would happen. All detrimental effects of the hoax have been simulated, says Ian. That's your opinion, Ian. Might be some truth to some of that. A lot of people think so. There are those who would agree with you that as 5G gets switched on, increasingly people will suffer with chronic fatigue and all manner of ailments that are very serious. And a lot of people agree with that. Patricia in Zurich, how you doing, my friend? Main message about COVID, Richie, is be afraid. Be very afraid. But no worries, there will be a vaccine sooner than expected. Unfortunately, one jab probably won't be enough. Just trust and line up a few times for more shots. We care about you. That's the main message, says Patricia, and she's absolutely right. David tweets, the dilemma for lead swingers, is how do they extend their time off due to long COVID if they haven't been in contact with anyone due to isolating? How do they extend their time off work due to long COVID if they haven't been in contact with anyone due to isolating? What are the chances of an isolator contracting long COVID on the rare occasion they venture out, says David. Cheers, mate. Thank you. Good stuff. Hi to Di in Hackney. How you doing, Di? I don't hate anyone, Di. From time to time, I do call out monumental bullshit where I see it. And in that case, I've done that before, all too easy. But this broadcaster doesn't have any hatred in his heart for anybody. That you believe or don't believe, it's up to you. Right, let's move on. This is the article sent to me by Paul in Leeds. Now, it's a 2007 piece written by Gina Colata in the New York Times. The headline at the time was, Faith in Quick Test Leads to Epidemic That Wasn't. Listen to this, I'll read you some. Dr. Brooke Herndon, an internist at Dartmouth Hitchcock Medical Center, could not stop coughing for 2 weeks starting in mid-April last year, 2006. She coughed, seemingly non-stop, followed by another week when she coughed sporadically. Annoying, she said, everyone who worked with her. Before long, Dr. Catherine Kirkland, an infectious disease specialist at Dartmouth, had a chilling thought. Could she be seeing the start of a whooping cough epidemic? By late April 2006, other healthcare workers at the same hospital were coughing, and severe, intractable coughing is a whooping cough hallmark. And if it was whooping cough, the epidemic had to be contained immediately because the disease could be deadly to babies in the hospital and could lead to pneumonia in the frail and vulnerable adult patients there. It was the start of a bizarre episode at the medical centre. The story of the epidemic that wasn't. Right? The article goes on to say, New York Times, 2007. For months, nearly everyone involved thought the medical centre had had a huge whooping cough outbreak with extensive ramifications. Nearly 1,000 healthcare workers at the hospital in Lebanon, New Hampshire, were given a preliminary test and furloughed from work until their results came in. 142 people, including Dr. Herndon, were told they appeared to have the disease, and thousands were given antibiotics and a vaccine for protection. Hospital beds were taken out of commission, including some in intensive care. Then, 8 months later, healthcare workers were dumbfounded to receive an email message from the hospital informing them that the whole thing was a false alarm. Not a single case of whooping cough was confirmed with the definitive test, growing the bacterium Bordetella pertussis in the laboratory. Instead, it appears the healthcare workers probably were afflicted with ordinary respiratory diseases like the cold. Now, as they look back on the episode, epidemiologists and infectious disease specialists say the problem was that they place too much faith in a quick and highly sensitive molecular test that led them astray. There are no national data on pseudo-epidemics caused by an over-reliance on such molecular tests, said Dr. Trish Pearl, an epidemiologist at Johns Hopkins and past president of the Society of Healthcare Epidemiologists of America. But, she said, pseudo-epidemics happen all the time. The Dartmouth case may have been one of the largest, but it was by no means an exception, she said. There was a similar whooping cough scare at Children's Hospital in Boston last autumn that involved 36 adults and 2 children. Definitive tests, though, did not find pertussis. Not an exception. And there was a warning in the article. A warning contained within the article, right? Let me give it to you now. Let me scroll on down. About relying on these tests, these new tests. It's a problem, said Dr. Pearl. My guess is that what happened at Dartmouth is going to become more common. Many of the new molecular tests are quick, but technically demanding, and each laboratory may do them in its own way. These tests, called home brews, are not commercially available, and there are no good estimates of their error rates. But their very sensitivity makes false positives likely. And when hundreds or thousands of people are tested, as occurred at Dartmouth, false positives can make it seem like there is an epidemic. False positives can make it seem like there is an epidemic. And the testing methods used to try and determine if somebody has COVID or not have come from these molecular tests, which were fairly new in the mid-noughties, in the mid-2000s. Warnings were given back then that these tests were unreliable and likely to give false positives. And here we are talking about it today. And I sent this to Dr. Vernon Coleman this morning, and he got back to me fairly quickly, it must be said, to say that it interested him greatly. Very interested he was in it today. 24 minutes to 4 o'clock Friday with me, Richie Allen, live on richieallen.co.uk, multiple other platforms, just to give this a little bit of balance. Eddie Mayer these days presents a programme for Talk Radio. Or was he on LBC? I think he was on LBC. It is LBC. LBC. I know. Jesus wept. He is a shy talk, yes. He had a listener on who was in a 2-month coma because of COVID, allegedly. A guy called Scott. And Scott missed the lockdown because, well, as he tells Eddie Mayer, he was in a coma.
I got ill. My girlfriend called an ambulance for me on the 26th of March. On the 27th, they put me on a ventilator.
Oh.
2 days after that, my kidneys failed. And the ventilator wasn't working. So I was very lucky and got into a program at Royal Papworth Hospital on ECMO. And I was there all of April, pretty much.
ECMO?
And they won't... Yeah, ECMO. Which is... not sure what it stands for, but basically it takes the blood out of your body, oxygenates it, and puts it back in.
Wow.
Yeah, there's from what I read about it, there's 15 units in the UK, and I was lucky enough to get one. So without that, I wouldn't be speaking. So yeah. And I woke up on the 8th of May. No. March, April. Yeah, 8th of May. So yeah, I pretty much missed the lockdown. But in a different way, I suppose.
Yeah. What was it like waking up after a coma?
Weird, because it felt like just a night's sleep. I woke up and then they told me I'd been on this journey and I pretty much broke down. The hardest bit, I suppose, is not ever having anyone there and everyone else is dressed in a spacesuit and you're there in a gown with pipes hanging out of everywhere. So that was weird, but it felt good to get rid of the nightmares because I was awake.
It felt good to get rid of the nightmares because I was awake. It sounds like the ventilator nearly killed him. He said that. They put him on a ventilator and that didn't do him any good. He had kidney failure and then he was put into an induced coma, presumably. That was Scott speaking to Eddie Mair on LBC Radio. The time, I keep telling you the time because it's unusual for me to be on in the mid-afternoon. You might need to know the time. It is at 22 minutes to 4. It's Friday. It's a more relaxed approach to the programme. More music than you'd ever expect to hear from me. Here's Supertramp then. Why not, eh? Very 70s-centric, the music this afternoon on your Richie Allen radio show. Still lots more to talk about, and I'll continue to read your comments as well as we go along. I do love this tune. Let me know where you're listening, by the way, if you can. Supertramp on the Richie Allen radio show. Stuart is in Llangollen. Is that how I say it, Stuart? It is Stuart, isn't it? The left hand of God. Llangollen. I think two L's usually means a ch if you're in Wales. If you're in Wales. Hi to Salika. How you doing, Salika Davis? Thanks for your tweet. Hi to Chris Clough, who's in Thailand. Say it again, Richie. Thailand. It's northern Thailand. That's the one. Gail is in Cornwall. I'm buffering down there. Sound a bit like Norman Collier, says Gail. Thanks, Gail. Way to boost the confidence of the presenter, Gail. And to everybody else listening in today, hi to Alan Badger, who's drinking banana bread beer. Alan, nice bottle that. Never tasted it myself, but there you go. Big news coming out of the Foreign Office this afternoon. Genuine. Here is Sky presenter Colin Brazier. Big news this.
The Foreign Office has announced its cat, pictured there, Palmerston, is to retire. Chief Mouser, for more than 4 years, officials say he'll see out his retirement chasing small rodents in the countryside.
What was that again? What was that last bit again? Colin Brazier there on Sky News about the mouse, or the cat even, that haunts the Foreign Office. If I can find it again. It's one of those days. Colin Brazier, what was that last bit?
For more than 4 years, officials say he'll see out his retirement chasing small rodents in the countryside.
Chasing small rodents in the countryside. Has anyone told Michael Gove he's been reassigned, no?
What kind of fuckery is this?
Brutal. I know, it's absolutely brutal. It's brutal. Jimmy Cranky has told Scotland's hospitality industry that taking folks' names and details is no longer guidance. It's now mandatory. Here is Jimmy Cranky speaking this afternoon in this never-ending telethon of the Scottish First Minister. Here she is.
The government is determined to do everything we can to prevent further outbreaks, and we want to also ensure that our hospitality sector can continue to remain open. That's why today I'm announcing two further measures. The first is that we now intend to make it mandatory for a range of settings, including hospitality businesses, to collect customer details. That requirement is already in guidance, but it will now be placed on a statutory footing, and it will help to ensure that our test and protect system can function as effectively as possible. Second, we intend to issue new statutory guidance relating to indoor hospitality. We'll set out more detail of this next week, but the aim is to ensure greater compliance with the key public health measures like physical distancing. And we will work with Police Scotland and local environmental health teams to explain these measures and, if necessary, enforce compliance.
Enforce compliance. Public health is a very interesting phrase. And you've never thought of it. It hasn't occurred to you. Stop shaking your head. You're here to be educated. It's not occurred to you. Public health is very important. It's a big thing for them, a big deal, in terms of being able to quantify the health of the nation. Everybody bleeding in to one. Public health. And every individual having a responsibility to do the right thing for public health, for the overall greater good. It's hugely important. And for some of you it won't be new, but for many of you it will be a new concept. But it has been around a while. Public Health England, public health officers, public health officials knocking on people's doors to ask them, have you had a test for COVID? If no, why not? If yes, can I see the result? Public health. Enforcement. You can't do what you'd like to do because we deem it to be of maybe of some danger to public health. And this is how, of course, it'll go when the vaccines are here. You'd like to think that you're a sovereign person with autonomy over your own body. But no, you have a duty for everybody else to get the vaccine. How can I be of any danger to people who get the vaccine? You will, no doubt, ask reasonably, because it's a reasonable question. They will say, ha ha, there are lots of people in society who can't get the vaccine because of some pre-existing health condition. They're lying, of course. They'll try and stick the fucking thing into 65 million people, but they'll tell you that there are people in society who can't have it. People who are getting treatment for cancer, or people who've got some other, you know, potentially fatal health condition. They can't have the vaccine at the moment. And how dare you think you can walk around with your COVID germs and infect that person? This is how it's all unfolding. And for a number of years now, public health has been a big thing. The concept of it, broadening that out to make people understand that what it means is that there is a collective public health which you must do your part to preserve. And this is why they're talking about, you know, shaming people who are overweight or smoke too much or drink too much or, you know, end up going to hospital because they have a certain type of diabetes. And that's not fair. If they had looked after themselves and thought about the greater public health, we'd be able to treat people for COVID. You see, this is where it is. Something I've been watching keenly develop. I'm watching it with great interest and great alarm. And what they managed to do beautifully is they bring the responsibilities of nations, of governments, they dilute those down to the individual. Do you remember Richard Haass, the president of the Council on Foreign Relations? I used to play the clip all the time. I think I played it only a short time ago. Do you remember Haass said that we've got to think of sovereignty in different terms in the future? It used to be in the past that countries couldn't just invade. We didn't like countries invading other countries. Most of the time, we respected the borders of other countries. Of course, he was lying. You have the US all over the world, Laos, Vietnam. I could be here all day. Korea, I could be here all day. But he said that was the rule of thumb, that countries' borders would be respected. Now, says Richard Haass, in what did he call it? What did he call it again? He didn't call it a new world order. World Order 2.0, he called it. World Order 2.0, he called it. And this is a few years ago. And the concept of World Order 2.0 is countries cannot do things in their own interests if those interests affect another country. And he mentions you can't burn coal if it causes devastating pollution, which could lead to climate change. We'd have to get involved, he said. Now think of what I said a minute ago. They've diluted that concept and they've brought that concept to the sovereign individual human being, to Mags Murphy or Johnny fucking Smith on the street. Now they're saying it used to be the case that you were an autonomous human being, and the only time we would get involved with you was if you broke the law, if you broke one of the Ten Commandments, or three of them anyway, if you murdered, or if you stole, right? There's two. I'm not too familiar with my Ten Commandments. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbour's wife. There's a third one. But that's the way it used to be. You as a human being, we have common laws. We understand you shouldn't steal. We understand you shouldn't assault. We understand you shouldn't murder. Don't do those things and we'll largely leave you alone. Yes, we will demand taxation from you, but we'll leave you alone. But no! In World Order 2.0, you're not fucking sovereign. Your body doesn't belong to you. and you can't do things that we deem to be putting others at risk. And that idea has come, that idea's time has now come. We're here now. That's what's going on. You have Jimmy Cranky on there. And this is why they're saying things that are tyrannical and outlandish. It's outrageous for any politician to tell a place of business, we compel you to track and trace and store the information of your customers and then pass it on to the local authority if they desire it. But this is World Order 2.0. Listen to Jimmy Cranky.
Science. Both these changes will take effect from next Friday and they will help to clarify exactly what is required from hospitality. But I want to emphasise that businesses should already be doing these things. So if you're not, don't wait till next week. Start complying now. Premises should be collecting and keeping contact details. Wherever possible, people should be asked to pre-book tables in advance and there should be no queuing. People should be seated only with table service. Customers should not be standing together to watch football, dancing or queuing at the bar. And there should be no queuing outside either. And in any circumstances where it is unavoidable for any reason, those in queues should be physically distanced. We're also asking that there is no background music or volume from televisions. It is really important in terms of minimising the risk of transmitting this virus that people are not having to shout over each other or lean in order to be heard.
Do you hear that disgusting ginger little troll whose arse should be impaled on the top of a Faber-Castell fucking pencil? Did you hear that? I mean, pitchforks and fucking torches would have been the case, I think, years ago when socialists were socialists and men were men. They wouldn't allow a rotten little moron like her threaten them like that. They're fucking threatening you now from the lecture.
This is where it is unavoidable for any reason. Those in queues should be physically distanced. We're also asking that there is no background music.
No fucking music. No television. We're telling businesses that are going to the wall whose employees are being laid off. We're telling them don't show the football. Don't have any music. Don't shout loudly. Collect your customers' details and information and pass it on to the local authority. How did she get out of that fucking building, Sturgeon? What's happened to people that they're blithely going along with this fucking tyranny? What's going on? Listen to this.
Or volume from televisions. It is really important in terms of minimising the risk of transmitting this virus that people are not having to shout over each other or lean in order to be heard.
Or lean in. Her pimply ginger little rectum should be permanently fucking stuck on the end of a Faber-Castell pencil. End of story. When are people going to stand up to it? The audit by the Daily Mail of 100 leading firms in this country showed that of the 100 leading firms in the country, most of them will be leaving a collective 230,000 people go, and that's 100 firms. And there's nothing for those people. Nothing. There's nothing for them to go and do. There's no other jobs. And many of those people are 5 or 6 years into a mortgage. And you've got that rotten fucking wench telling people you can't do this and you can't do that and you can't speak loudly, no music, turn the TV down, wear visors. I don't know. I don't know. It's 4 minutes to 4 anyway. Jesus Christ. It's hard to listen to that, you know. It's not. It wouldn't be so hard to listen to it if there was any resistance to it. If the businesses got together, the chambers of commerce, the collective chambers of commerce, the business associations, and said, "Do you see that little rat bag with that fucking straw head in her? That fucking Wurzel Gummidge fucking lookalike? Do you see that? Ignore it. Open your business. Take down those stupid fucking signs about 2 metres. Burn the fucking masks. Get your punters back in. Have a shindig, turn on the fucking karaoke, and get on with the rest of your life." but they're going along with it, people. The vast majority. I was in a supermarket yesterday morning, obviously without a mask. Nobody said a word, and I'm not particularly sensitive, and I'm not precious, but you can see them staring at you. Many of them want to say something, but when you look like I do, they're not likely to say anything. I'm 6.5 foot tall, I'm very fit. I look a bit gruesome with me shaved head on me. So they're not likely to fucking say, hey, why aren't you wearing a mask? I'm not going to say anything. I'm not going to I'm not going to get confrontational. I'll just tell them to mind their own business. But you can see they're wound up vexed. Why is he getting away with it? Well, why are you wearing one? Why don't you take one off? Do you realise how fucking stupid you look there? On the fucking Jacob's Crackers aisle. Do you realise how thick you look with a fucking mask on you? Walking around a supermarket with nobody near you. Does it occur to you? You look as fucking thick as Forrest Gump times 100. But they're walking around, giving people daggers. Listening to Muppets like Cranky. Business is going to the fucking wall. In Ireland they said, no pubs now till September. And it's the same in Ireland, they just go along with it. Oh, okay, I'll comply with my own fucking downfall, with my own doom. There was a brilliant woman on Sky this morning, from a business college, and for some reason I can't get the clip. I can't remember her name, but she was brilliant anyway. She said, because of the way things have gone in recent years with massive corporations like Amazon, developing a kind of a business hegemony, right? She said a lot of businesses were just about getting by. She was very good, this woman, from a business college. She said most of them are carrying, most businesses before COVID are carrying some debt. Not debt tantamount to quicksand that's going to fucking ruin your business, but a level of debt that has to be watched and watched carefully. Most businesses, she said. So businesses were on the margins anyway. Then she says, along comes this thing. The government says, close down. And we will inflict upon you an enormous amount of debt by furloughing your employees and then later on down the road giving you the bill. While you've not been trading and making any money whatsoever and you had those debts that were just about serviceable before COVID. Now, you're fucked. Fuck now. Of course, she didn't say that, not on Sky News, but she was bang on. And they are going along with it. What do they fear? That Plaid will come along? Well, if every business on a street opened up, burned the fucking signs and the masks, started giving discounts initially to get people back in the door, if everybody did it, Plaid wouldn't have enough fucking manpower to be going to shops to tell them to close down. I'm astonished by this. I really am. Never claimed to be a hero, me. I've never claimed to be a tough guy. I never have. You've been with me for years. You've listened to me for years. I don't play the hard man, because I'm not. But there's no fucking way my business would be closed now. None. Fuck 'em. Open your business. Jesus Christ! Open it now! Imagine, earlier on, councillors telling people don't come to the fucking beaches. Imagine it. In August, Jesus wept. You've got shops there. They've done nothing for months. They're praying for a bit of trade. They're fucking begging for it. And you have moronic politicians. Little Hitlers. Labour, the Lib Dems, the Tories, don't come down here, socially fucking distance. Do you know, at least from what I can tell today, at least on the beaches on the south coast, people are ignoring them. They're ignoring them. And well they might, ignore them. Fuck it, you're not going to catch anything off of anybody. Ooh, but they said that they got 60 positive tests yesterday. Yes, but none of those people are sick. Can you not get that into your sick fucking skull? They're not sick, these fucking people. They're not sick. They're being told they have COVID antibodies in their system. And we know the tests are flawed. So of the 60 that they said have tested positive, maybe fucking 10 have it. You know? Mad, isn't it? Isn't it just fucking crazy, this, isn't it? Eh? I swore I wouldn't swear. There you are today. I said I won't do it. I said today I won't. I'll be good today. Today I'll come off sounding like a professional. Drive time radio today, I said. I'll come off. It'll be like Steve Wright, eat your fucking heart out, you know? That's what I said today. It'll be Steve Wright, eat your heart out. And I'll show the BBC Two how to do drive time radio. And then you just listen to this shit and you just can't. You just can't. Not lose your fucking temper. You know what I mean? This is the Rolling Stones on the Richie Allen Radio Show. The time is 4:02. Back with more in a minute. So if you meet me, right, it's after the Rolling Stones on the Richie Allen Radio Show. Look, I've calmed down a bit now. And look, I shouldn't be... Nobody should be ranting like that and swearing like that. It's hard. It really is difficult for every single rational human being. I know you struggle with it yourself. It's difficult to see people acquiesce to this. That's all it is, really. You know, I thought people were made of sterner stuff, really. I used to say this to my old friends, you know. The people that I spent a lot of time with when I began doing these programmes were the three wise men of Maxwell, Mars and Ike, David Ike, Jim Mars and Jordan Maxwell. One of the things we used to discuss was, when it got to this, would that be the spark, you know? Would that be the catalyst for people to shake off the shackles and rise up? Not in any scary way, because a lot of people are scared, you know? I spoke to a woman in the park recently, and she said she was nervous about if people rose up. She was nervous about what would replace the current system. And you've got to be mature enough to understand that is a very legitimate fear shared by a lot of people. And it's so all-encompassing, that particular fear, that it results in many people just basically burying their head in the sand and accepting the current paradigm as about the best we got or the best we can do at the moment. Now, you give that a bit of thought, not now, but later on. More people than you realise are aware that we are in tyranny, but they fear what might come after it. They do. They look at videos on television, news programmes, or they look at YouTube and they see these scumbags on the far right. You know who I'm talking about now. These animals, right? Vermin on the far, far right. The football hooligans. The guys who revel in violence. And it's been said to me more than once on my own particular journey down this lunatic highway. It's been said to me by people, Rich, if enough people rose up against it and put them on the run out of their country homes and castles and out of their buildings in Westminster and Whitehall and Downing Street and out of Buckingham Palace, what would we be left with, Rich? We'd be left with scumbags. And the truth is, I don't have any answer for that. None. I can't say, well, no, that's not the case. It wouldn't be a Back to the Future 2 warped timeline landscape where Biff Tannen is fucking running everything with all of his thugs. I can't say that would not happen, because it might happen. And that scares the absolute bejesus out of people. Right, so keep that in mind. What time is it now? I thought I'd be done by 4:00, but sure, anyway. Maybe if I wasn't ranting incoherently, I might be done now. I might be having a cold beer. Thought you were off the beer, you big bally. What I've actually done is I've stopped drinking on work nights. And I've done very well to do that. I'm very proud of myself. I'm going to have a cold beer, yeah. A cold beer. Any old crap will do, to be honest. Doesn't matter. Any old corner shop special, 4 for £3 or something like that. I don't care. So hi to Patrick, hi to Helen. Price is in Galway. How you doing, Helen? In Galway, you're not too far from my Jean Anne. Helen says, I was just in the supermarket. All idiots in masks. We're doomed, says Helen. Nobody questioning anything. Thanks, Helen. I did just skirt over another tweet from somebody who said the opposite, who didn't see too many masks in his shop. You see, it's hit and miss, isn't it? I'm with Helen. When I was in the supermarket yesterday morning, everybody was wearing masks. Every single person in there. Didn't see a single person. Sans mask. You pretentious bastard. Pretentious? Mwah? 4:11. A couple of clips to bring you before we move on. And try and lighten this up. Kevin O'Sullivan is a very interesting guy, and a very interesting guy is he. He's an evening presenter for Talk Radio. He had a few things in the last day or two to say. He's been talking about the plandemic. Kevin O'Sullivan, I think he might be a comedian too. Here he is reminding his audience that in the UK's darkest hours, the theatres and businesses did remain open. He's channeling Churchill here. I liked this when I heard it.
You want to know something? The coronavirus closed down the West End theatres in about 3 seconds flat. Adolf Hitler never closed down the theatres. The theatres stayed open throughout the Blitz. And in the Second World War, we tried to keep this country going. We tried to keep a semblance of normality. And along comes this coronavirus, which hasn't killed many people in the great scheme of things. Exactly. Seems to be a very minor condition right now.
Yes.
And we've completely shut the country down. And I think you agree with me, Tommy. We're in the grip of a kind of madness.
Land of hope and glory. Good man. I was channeling Jerusalem there when Kevin O'Sullivan was giving it large there. He also had a few choice words today, speaking to Mike Graham. He had a few choice words for middle class people, whoever they are. Have you ever met a middle class person? For me, it's always been blokes like me who scrape by and rich people. Is there some middle order, is there? Or has it collapsed like England's batting lineup? Is there a middle order? Anyway, here's Kevin O'Sullivan saying, save your careers before they're exported to India.
It is, and all those selfish middle class namby-pambies going, oh, it's wonderful working from home. I've got my work-life balance back.
Yeah.
Well, here's the deal, guys. You're all going to lose your jobs, because if you can do your job at home, you can do it in Delhi. You can do it in a foreign call centre. Your bosses will work out that they can employ someone from a far-off foreign land for much cheaper than you, and you'll all be out of work soon. So stop glorying in working from home and get back to your jobs, save the cities, and save your own careers.
Land of hope and glory. Exactly. Does he not do people not realise that? Even Rishi Sunak, the Chancellor of the Exchequer, said as much on British television news today. He said, we accept that there are a lot of jobs we can't save, he said. Jobs are gone. They're sitting at home while their employers are going, oh, this is lovely, we can save a bit on the rent. And this is lovely, while we're saving on the rent, what else can we save? Ah, there's a young boy and a young girl in India who might do the job for a lot less. Yes, let's export those jobs overseas. As the future Mrs. Allen, oft mentioned, of course, her company has exported quite a few jobs to the subcontinent. You can't blame the young Indian men and women who wanted jobs. Not their fault. They're bright kids. They're ambitious kids. They want to work. But he's right, O'Sullivan. You're giving them license to get rid of your job. Get off your hairy hole and get into work. And don't bother wearing a mask. Speaking of Jean Anne Crowley, I have it on good authority that my pal in Cleggan is particularly partial to this tune. So here it is. This is Sting and an Englishman in New York on the Richie Allen Radio Show. Back with a little bit more till about 4:30. Before I hit the floor, it's so warm, then I'm having a beer. Here's Sting, back with more in a minute. A gentleman will walk, but no. Yeah, it's a brilliant song. I meant to do this at the start of the programme, but I forgot. And Jean Anne has reminded me. Simon Dolan, the businessman, the entrepreneur. Good news for Simon, good news for us. We'll get Simon on the programme next week again. You'll remember that Simon's challenge against the lockdown was basically rejected. The High Court blocked him challenging the government. You remember this. And Simon said he would appeal it. Well, he's been given leave to appeal because Lord Justice Hickenbottom found that the lockdown measures do raise fundamental issues over the accountability of government ministers. So Simon Dolan will go ahead with his appeal against the government. And it's important to know that. After all that ranting, right, I mean, you know, fingers crossed and all is that, and you never rely on the legal system. But it's important to mention that, Simon Dolan. And this was, I meant to mention, I didn't put a bullet point down on my little notepad. I should have done. I thought I'd remember it, but yeah, it's important. And of course, the UK media has ignored it. It's ignored it. Not a whisper. Not a dicky bird. Not a whisper. I challenge you to prove me wrong. None of the newspapers, none of them, nor the broadcast media has mentioned that Lord Justice Hickenbottom has said, well, hang on a second now. Simon Dolan should be allowed to challenge the government because the lockdown measures do raise fundamental issues over the accountability of the government and its ministers. So well done to Simon Dolan, who's a successful entrepreneur, and he's an entrepreneur even, and he's a very nice guy as well. Like Simon, he's been on the programme. Very nice guy. Okay, let's move on. 19 minutes past four. Oh, be Jesus. What have I got for you? There's a couple of important stories to get through before we go. James O'Brien, LBC. Yeah. O'Brien had a call from a guy who said that he would be going to France and that he would not quarantine when he got home if such a quarantine was introduced, as seems likely. Right? Because if you believe stories emerging today, and this is changing all the time, it's changing at a rate of knots. They're going to quarantine, they're introducing new countries to the list of countries that if you visit them, you will need to quarantine upon your return. France is being mooted as a possible one. Right. So O'Brien, on his radio show today, had a call from a guy who has a house in France, and he said, if I have to go to France, and I think I will have to go, I will not be quarantining when I come back. Here's the exchange. Oh, Richie. It's the heat. Here's the exchange.
I'll be travelling to France at the end of the month, yes. And when I return, I will not be quarantining.
Now you put me in a difficult position because obviously I want to shout at you and bite your head off and say rude words, but
because you're an arsehole, O'Brien.
But before I do that, yeah. So talk me through your reasoning. Show me your working, Ian, please.
Personally, I think it all depends on your circumstances, your reason for travel. I mean, basically, I'm not going on a holiday. I do have a house in France, and I'm renovating that house.
Yes.
So when I travel to France, I jump in my van in Durham, I drive down through the UK, drive through England,
yes,
into the tunnel, and I drive 8 hours down through France. It's an 18-hour drive altogether. And I stop, we don't get out of the van in the tunnel, because we're not allowed to.
Yeah.
I might stop at one.
But we all know, everyone could do this. You could say, you know, we're going to the campsite and we won't talk to any other campers.
Yeah,
and I know,
yeah, I understand that. It's proving it.
Isn't it?
But to me, it's not. I mean, basically, I will go to the house, stay in the house. I might go to the supermarket once. I will go to a petrol station to fill up to come back in a week's time. And that would be it. I would have far less contact with people
in France than you would here. So you're making a bespoke personal calculation, which in your case, and this is the problem, your case is built upon a genuine desire to do the right thing, but mitigated by the desire to do what you want to do as well. And you sound responsible, and your analysis sounds fair, and your conclusion in many ways sounds reasonable. But this is the problem, because here's someone else over here who's utterly convinced that their solution is reasonable as well, and compared to you, they sound as mad as cheese.
Who's he talking about?
They don't think they're going to catch it because it's been invented by Bill Gates.
Ah, they don't think they'll catch it because it was invented by Bill Gates. Ah.
Over here, who's utterly convinced that their solution is reasonable as well, and compared to you, they sound as mad as cheese. They sound as they don't think think they're going to catch it because it's been invented by Bill Gates. And in their own crazy box, they're just as rational and reasonable as you are. And
if I was in a room with James O'Brien, I'd have to be very careful. I'm not sure I'd be able to keep my hands by my sides. O'Brien is putrid. He is a third of a broadcaster. Not one third of a broadcaster. He is a big, large turd in the punch bowl of broadcasting. He knows full well that people are not going around suggesting that Bill Gates invented coronavirus. Maybe one or two people are. When Gates' name comes up, people are asking questions about Gates' influence over UK academic institutions. They're asking questions about why Gates is the single biggest donor to the World Health Organization. They're asking about Gavi and all of these firms, all of these subsidiary firms that branch out from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation that are there to do one thing and one thing only, to provide vaccines for every man, woman and child on planet Earth. That's what people want to know about. So for O'Brien to reduce people who ask really good and really important questions, to reduce them to describing them as, oh, you've got the guy over here who's mad as cheese, he thinks Gates invented the virus. This is fucking terrible, isn't it? And this is broadcasting in the 21st century. There's no fairness to it. There's no decency to it. There's no professionalism to it. There's no pride in it. Because no matter how strongly I might feel about something, I couldn't do that. Can only work with what I can prove. Shocking stuff. But it's a daily thing now, you know? The science is now settled on vaccines. Look, I want to talk very briefly, and I'm going to wrap it up then, and you'll be glad I'm going to wrap it up. Lebanon is a country that has been under the screw for years. And I know this audience does attract listeners who would be very well-read on Middle Eastern affairs. And by well-read, I don't mean The Guardian. You get your information from genuine sources. And you know Lebanon has had a very difficult time, right? It's been attacked almost on a daily basis by Israel. It's got a lot of Palestinian refugees there. Struggling, like I said, it's under sanctions. Of course, you know this. Most people should know this if they listen to the independent media. The United States has sanctioned it, of course. It's in a desperate situation. And the government is basically the Hezbollah party, which of course has a military wing, as we know. And its alliance with the Christian president, I can never pronounce it, it's Aoun, right? And that government in Lebanon is not the choice of the United States, it's not the choice of Israel, it's not the choice of France, the axis of evil, or the square of evil, because you put the United Kingdom in there as well. They don't like this government. They've wanted to replace it for a long time. And it's a hugely popular government, despite what Western media does, which is tell you that the Lebanese are, they hate the government and they're constantly mobilising against the government and they want to get rid of the government. It's not strictly true. It's a popular government. The country's up to its neck in problems. The sanctions. And of course, the bomb this week. The bomb, he says. Because it's increasingly looking like it might have been a bomb. Now, I've seen some footage on Twitter, which I place no faith in whatsoever. This alleged footage of a missile strike. That stuff is as easily faked as anything you've ever seen before. Pixar, special effects in Hollywood movies. It's very simple to do that, so I'm not buying it. But I'm beginning to think that the explosion in the harbour where the ammonium nitrate was stored, I'm beginning to think that the explosion might have been deliberate. And I have no idea who did it. And I wouldn't be apportioning blame to anybody. But there are four countries who've been undermining Lebanon for years, want to replace the government there with its own puppet government. And that's a fact. Now, I'm not teaching you how to suck eggs. You know this. Right? So it stands to reason that those who would replace the country's government with its own puppet government, given the opportunity to set fire to or blow up a compound storing even ammonium nitrate might, if given the opportunity, might do it. It's only my opinion. I can't prove it. But today, bit of food for thought. Tony Blair. Don't worry, I'm not going to subject you to Blair's monotonous voice. Blair has a tribute act called David Miliband. And he's a bastard, David Miliband, a real bastard. These days, he's the president of the International Rescue Committee, which purports to do what? What does it do? Well, according to its website, dear friend, and I quote, "The International Rescue Committee helps people whose lives and livelihoods are shattered by conflict and disaster to survive, to recover, and to regain control of their future." Sounds very benign. Excuse me. "The International Rescue Committee helps people whose lives and livelihoods are shattered by conflict and disaster to survive, recover, and regain control of their future." That's what it claims to do. And Tony Blair's tribute band, or tribute act, David Miliband, is the president of it. He was on Sky this afternoon, former UK Foreign Secretary, and he tells you on Sky what the International Rescue Committee really is. "When the chicken screams, the fox comes running, but not to help." Here's David Miliband.
"That there's an immediate response that's needed to help the injured, to keep the health service going. I'm afraid the chance to find survivors has probably passed, but there's the retrieval of bodies. So there's an immediate response. But then secondly, the crisis has to be dealt with, but so does the crisis before the crisis. Before the explosions, Lebanon was already a country in dire need. Remember, it's only about..."
Yes, because your masters, the guys controlling your strings, keep fucking it every which way but Sunday in the arse to prevent it getting back on its feet again. And you know this. But what are you talking about anyway? I thought your organisation was there to help people survive conflict and disaster, to give them some clothes and some food. What are you talking about?
"Only about 5.5-6 million people. 25% of the country are refugees. 30% of the country..."
Palestinian refugees, mostly.
"...are living in absolute poverty of a..."
30% in poverty because of the sanctions.
"...of a really very, very basic kind. And the value of the currency had plummeted because of economic mismanagement and corruption."
No, again, because of the external pressures on the government by Trump, Netanyahu, Macron, the Muppet that sits in Downing Street now, and his predecessor. They're the people responsible for the situation regarding Lebanon's currency. Don't tell lies now, because it's very easy to figure this stuff out. Anyway, I thought you were there, your organisation, to just help people dust themselves down, give them a bit of bread, bit of soup, get their clothes back for them. What are you doing there, really?
"And so we're saying that there's a short-term task for aid agencies like ours to undertake. We have about 500 staff across Lebanon. We have a team of about 150 in Beirut running..."
You've got 500 people in the country, including 150 in Beirut. Are you there with the permission of the Lebanese government, or are you just there? And what are the 500 people doing there?
"Programs that range from protection of unaccompanied children..."
Protection of unaccompanied children. Wow. Guess who David Tony Blair Tribute Act Miliband is really close friends with? I'll give you a clue. Sounds like the Swintons.
"About 150 in Beirut running programs that range..."
The Swintons.
"...range from protection of unaccompanied children to employment schemes..."
Employment schemes.
"...for refugee and Lebanese adults. So there's a short-term need, and there are trusted NGOs, non-governmental organisations like ours, that can get money to where it's needed without getting into the difficulties of the Lebanese system."
What was that again, David? What did you just say there? That you can operate within Lebanon without having to use or go through the Lebanese system or get permission from the authorities there? Is that what you said?
"There are trusted NGOs, non-governmental organisations like ours, that can get money to where it's needed without getting into the difficulties of the Lebanese system."
Yeah. Think of what we said earlier on about Richard Haass and the Council on Foreign Relations. Sovereign borders. Eh, who needs them? We'll go into that country, 500 of us, and we'll protect the unaccompanied children. says David Miliband. Who's friends? Now, David Miliband is under no suspicion. Not by me or anybody I know. I wouldn't dream of it. That is gutter journalism to make any suggestion about David Miliband. David Miliband is a father. I'm sure David Miliband is a law-abiding man. But his pals are pederasts. I mean, maybe he doesn't know that. But they are. And he's talking about people. He's in New York City, by the way. He's talking about 500 people there. NGOs. Protecting unaccompanied children. And bypassing the Lebanese authorities, eh?
But the Lebanese system also has to be addressed. And I think it was very significant that President Macron of France should have gone there yesterday and been very clear that that political reform is absolutely essential.
Ah, political reform. But the International Rescue Committee is apparently there to help people whose lives are shattered by conflict to survive. Now you're saying you want to go along with Macron, that there has to be political reform and that you can go there and operate in broad daylight without getting permission from anybody. This is how it is now. I could rant on now for the next 10 minutes about paedophilia, but I won't. Oxfam, but I won't. I'll leave it there because it's time for me to go. It's time for me to go and dry myself off because it is sweltering in studio. Thanks for listening to this bullshit today. And I really appreciate that. I appreciate it. It's not easy to listen to it. But you're here and you're here every day and I really appreciate that. Thanks for being here. Have a really nice weekend. And look after yourselves and one another. We will talk again on Sunday morning with Sunday View. And oh, let me tell you, next week is my last week before my summer holiday. So I'll be with you next week. And then from the 17th, I think, of August, I'm off for a couple of weeks. And then I'm back till Christmas. That's how it is. So next week, I'm with you all week. And the following week, and the week after that, I'll be away on my holiday. Make a note of that. I know it's important to some of you to make a note of such things. Hi to Jason Jack. Is it Jason Jackman? It is. How you doing, Jason? That's it. Leaving you with Blood Brothers. The lyrics of this are profound and beautiful and important and stirring and moving and sentimental and inspirational. This is Blood Brothers, Bruce Springsteen, the E Street Band. It's beautiful, this. See you real soon. Bye now.